say my name.
Just a game. It's a religion. Costa Papoulias and Stephen Hindle take a look at the week that was and what's coming for your Montreal Canadiens. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network.
Of hockey is here as we bring you another episode of Breaking Habs Radio here on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I, of course, am Coach K, joined by Stephen Hindle, and we're going to get right into the crux of things. Sunday night, Montreal Canadiens eliminate the Ottawa Senators. The score was 2-0, a late empty netter by Max Pacioretty, but the beauty of a goal by Brendan Gallagher to send Montreal into the second round. We don't know who they're going to face yet. That game's still ongoing as Tampa and Detroit are still 0-0. But, Steve, your thoughts about that first-round series?
Well, I'd like to, first of all, say, you know, happy round one vacation as we're all enjoying a few days off between round one and two. And courtesy of the Lightning and Red Wings, as you said, the Habs are getting a few extra days off thanks to three straight wins to start the series. Things got a little tough for Montreal Canadiens fans through games 4 and 5, but, well, as we all found out this morning, the NHL announcing its Hart nominees, and wouldn't you know it, the very likely winner of the Hart Trophy leading the Canadiens, 43 save shutout, with everything on the line, with a Senators team that managed to score all of the goals in game 4 and 5 practically. Yeah, Carey Price was nothing but spectacular, and I think he erased a lot of doubts that his entire squad of teammates planted in games 4 and 5. The break is going to do this team well. Guys like Max Pacioretty, he may have put the cherry on top with the empty netter with 0.3 seconds left, and he did play a good game 6, but he is ever so thankful for this break. Guys you really want to pay attention to. In particular, the one who got his monkey off the back was Brendan Gallagher. He was leading the team in shots. For him to get the game winner in game 6, that helped a lot. You got to hope these guys are building on a lot of positives this week.
Well, you would absolutely think so. And looking at that series as a whole and the contributions of certain players, one can't help but love the contribution of a kid like Greg Patterson. The 2 points in the last two games. Of course, getting the assist on a game winner by Brendan Gallagher. He's been nothing short of fantastic for Montreal, despite the fact that he's been playing limited minutes. Steve, can Montreal find a way to give him more? Because what he contributes on the ice is paramount, and I think he brings more to the game than a guy, say, like Tom Gilbert.
Well, what's very interesting is how important depth was for the Montreal Canadiens and how important depth has been in round one for all of the teams who are advancing right now. But we'll talk about the Canadiens. Why? Because that's what we do. But we, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the numbers, Coach, you got to realize that Greg Pattern didn't actually fit in to the
plans.
Noteworthy numbers through this series. He came in to replace Nathan Beaulieu, who, of course, suffered an undisclosed upper body injury at the, I would say, hands, but let's call it straight shoulder, of Erik Karlsson to the head. Now, in replacing him, he played an excellent, excellent role in minimal minutes. It increased over the last few games of the series, but I'm not kidding when I say I'm looking through the notes from the series right now, and quite frankly, his number and his name just do not appear in the notes. And that's actually a really, really, really good thing.
That's fantastic as far as a defenseman is concerned.
Because as a rookie fitting in to playoff action as a substitute, when you're not necessarily entirely prepared for it, you're going to have more than butterflies and it might take more than one game. Well, it did. And Pattern settled down and you proved it in talking about his last two games, notably the 2 points. The minutes he played and the adjustments he made, it helped Michel Therrien and his staff once again find the ability to use six defenders with regular usage. For a while there, especially when PK was thrown out during the Microstone incident, he basically, you know, cost his team a lot of time there, and the Beaulieu injury kind of screwed things up. So Pattern coming in and then being able to assume the minutes as he got comfortable made it easier on guys like Petrie and Gilbert and, of course, Alexi Emelin, who played a lot of ice time in this series, but not too much. And I think that is extremely key in the Montreal Canadiens 3, 4, and 5 defenders. They need to play a lot, but definitely not too much. Not in the neighborhood of Andrei Markov and PK Subban registering 25, 26 minutes a game minimum.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, that's just the whole thing. Over the years, we've talked about how Montreal hasn't used their youth, and you look at how they use Nathan Beaulieu leading up to the playoffs, an unfortunate injury on a perfectly clean hit by Erik Karlsson, sending him to the press box as opposed to keeping him on the ice. And then you look at Pattern coming in, and basically Montreal lost a hair of offense from the back end, but overall their defensive structure remained the same.
Listen, to all of our listeners who aren't necessarily familiar with us, Costa and I are, you can find us regularly on MontrealHockeyTalk.com.
Where we swear pre-game a lot more than we do here.
Actually, yeah, kind of a little more information and hockey talk centered over here. Over on the pregame and postgame shows on Montreal Hockey Talk, things get a little wild, but the bottom line is that over the season, what we've noticed is just an absolute transformation of what was going on in Nathan Beaulieu's game. And one of the important factors in him becoming a regular for the Montreal Canadiens was sort of, I don't know how best to put this, but basically he had to let go of some of his offensive instincts and embrace being able to play a more consistent and comfortable defensive game. That ultimately led to his increased ice time, increased role, and hopefully in the development of Beaulieu as a prospect and a defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens over the years to come, what you see is his confidence rise and his offensive instincts come out over time.
Well, yeah, that's just the thing. When you look at a kid like Pattern, who obviously when he first came up, spent a lot of time thinking about his defensive game more than the offensive side. Now you're starting to see that blend come in.
Well, and you know what? Just to jump in there, and this is to follow up on conversations we had with the Hamilton Bulldogs this year. Greg Pattern was asked to take a step back in his role with the Hamilton Bulldogs, especially his offensive role, mainly because the Montreal Canadiens wanted to see if he could prove himself as a better defender. From his side of the red line in, they wanted to see if he could do a better job. If it meant taking away power play time and giving him more shorthanded time and more even strength minutes, that was something they wanted to see if Patterson was willing to do. Greg said yes at the start of the season. He wanted to do whatever it took to make sure that he was going to be able to successfully get to that level. And look, it took a few call-ups. The Montreal Canadiens have a lot of depth, and as we very well know, they led the NHL in the reverse of man games lost, which is basically they were the healthiest team in the league for the entire season. So that helps an awful lot, and it crowds the situation for guys trying to break in. But he's just a small piece of what was working well for the Montreal Canadiens, and that was their depth. What wasn't working well for them, as we know, was their top six. The guys were not putting pucks in the net. But how much did it surprise you to see the Montreal Canadiens absolutely flip their game plan on its head and just fire pucks like it was going out of style at the Ottawa Senators and Craig Anderson?
But they had done that earlier in the series, Steve, and what worried me was the fact that they were clamping down defensively a little bit too much, and it was taken away from their offense. And now in saying that, you have to give a lot of credit to the Ottawa Senators, because the Senators bottled up the neutral zone a lot and made it very difficult for Montreal to create transition offense. And so here's my question to you. Moving forward, if you look at how they dealt the Ottawa Senators and the difficulty that they had in the middle of that series, do you think that moving forward Montreal can adjust and change the way that they play because they need to generate more offense?
Well, that's a bit of a loaded question on your behalf.
Sim, how is it loaded?
It's loaded because, let's just put it this way, you don't know which direction you're going to need to take that focus for round two. Right now, the Montreal Canadiens are focusing on what works best for them. They are practicing on things that they need to work on, namely their power play. But let's not forget that they had an absolutely god-awful first period in each and every single game of the series against Ottawa. They didn't play a terrible first period in every game, but they didn't score against the Senators.
With the exception of Game 6.
Well, but that was the difference in the entire series and how that game stood out for the Canadiens as being outshot, Carey Price standing on his head making all the saves, whereas you look at Craig Anderson, and he was forced into 49, 46 saves performances. He was absolutely bombarded with shots. Not until Game 6 did Carey Price feel the reverse of that, which is finding the Montreal Canadiens' regular season persona is not what they have demonstrated, essentially, through the six games against the Senators.
You're listening, of course, to Breaking Habs Radio on Hockey This Week Radio Network. I'm Coach K. Costa-Papoulias, joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Stephen Hindle. Now, Steve, in getting back to that question once again, and I know you thought it was loaded, but here's the thing. If you're looking at Game 7 between Detroit and Tampa Bay, the one thing that you notice from both of these teams is they're doing a great job clogging up the middle of the ice. The neutral zone, there is no space to skate. More often than not, they will take the puck and they will dump it in once they cross the red line in order to get in on the defense and generate offense from down low. You and I both know that Montreal has a hard time generating any offense off the half wall and separating defenders from the puck because of their lack of size at certain positions. Can Montreal overcome that?
I think they can. I think Devontae Smith-Pelly showed that he was very able to be a wrecking ball on a top line. He had 21 hits through five games for the Montreal Canadiens playing on that top line before things got shuffled around. And the problem with having guys clearing things out on those top lines is that if that's happening, the other guys who have to fulfill the other end of the bargain, which is putting pucks in the net, well, they've got to do that. And that comes back to Max Pacioretty and David Desharnais. Pacioretty gets a bit of a pass, especially in the sense that he was coming back from injury, especially since he came in with an actual, you know, first goal for the Montreal Canadiens in an important game. He gets the cherry on top in the empty netter, but the bottom line is he didn't produce or seem as involved as fans wanted to see him, nor as he wanted to see himself. There was an element lacking of Pacioretty's game, and he knew it himself, which is why I am quite sure he's thankful for the next round. Now, Desharnais is a guy who does not perform in the playoffs. Two goals, one empty netter, and 33 playoff games in his career. What does that tell you?
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in our second segment as we're going to look at different variables on the Montreal Canadiens and their effect on the outcome of the next series. We'll remind you right now that Tampa Bay and Detroit going into the locker rooms after two periods, they're still knotted up with goose eggs, and it's going to be interesting to see who wants it more in that third period.
We will talk about this an awful lot more throughout the rest of this show, yes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on, of course, is the...
Get your hands away from me.
That's so wrong. The awards being dealt out by the NHL this week. Now, today we got...
The nominations, not the awards. Yes, we have to go to Vegas. We got to be in the desert before the candy is handed out.
But to me, it's sort of a foregone conclusion. You look at the nominations for the Hart that came out today, the Hart Memorial Trophy, of course, for the league's most valuable player. You have Alexander Ovechkin. To me, that's a token gesture because of the fact he led the league in goals. You look at John Tavares of the New York Islanders, well-deserved on his part because the Islanders would not be able to get anywhere near the playoffs without his contributions. And, of course, the man among all three of those men, that being Montreal goaltender Carey Price. To me, it's a shoo-in.
Well, of course, it goes the same way as the Vezina nominations when they were announced, and that is, you know, runner-up number three, runner-up number two,
and
the winner. And Carey Price is going to be the winner of both of these trophies. It's getting a little redundant at this point because it's becoming more interesting to see how he is going to prove the body of work that was an incredible record-breaking regular season for the Canadiens' number one netminder in the playoffs. That's where he wants to do it, and he said it himself. He feels he can win a Stanley Cup. I don't think he's going to have to throw the team on his back. He certainly has all season long, but I don't think he has to do it more than he has. And in comparison to Ovechkin and Tavares, both absolutely wonderful seasons. Ovechkin's turnaround, something worth noting. Tavares being healthy just showcases how dangerous the Islanders are about to become for the next half decade to full decade of hockey that we're about to experience in Brooklyn. Very excited about that. But let's be honest, it's not their time to shine just right now. Carey Price's spotlight puts them in the shadows. But I just, it's tough to watch the nominations come out right now because that big prize is still sitting there waiting to be handed out in June.
Now let's talk about another award, and that's the Norris Trophy for the league's best defenseman. Three nominations there, one being Drew Doughty of the Los Angeles Kings, the second, Erik Karlsson of the Ottawa Senators, and of course the third, Montreal's own P.K. Subban. Here's the question I want to ask you, Steve. The performance of Carey Price, will that factor in to the voting for the Norris on P.K.'s part? Because if you're going to give that kind of hardware to Carey Price, and speaking that's the Vezina and the Hart Trophy potentially, will that hurt PK's chances of winning the Norris?
Well, I don't see how it can hurt PK's chances of the Norris. The regular season is the regular season. It's in the books. It's done. So if you're going to wishy-washy defer who wins what based on who's winning what already, then less merit is already
being done before.
Listen, I don't think that there's a clear case that Erik Karlsson and Drew Doughty can merit winning the Norris Trophy. It is hard to give it to them based on all of the comparables. The Kings didn't make the playoffs after their fantastic stretch of runs. Doughty didn't do the same thing in points, but he played the minutes and throws the hits, and he was a fantastic possession player. Karlsson had an incredible second half, but where would he be without Cinderella Andrew Hammond and potential Rookie of the Year Mark Stone? So yeah, sure, P.K. Subban gets a lot of benefit of that doubt, but he also has to be responsible for the fact that the Montreal Canadiens were the best defensive team in the NHL, and that wasn't just Carey Price on his own.
No, his defensive contributions, I mean, they're comparable to Karlsson's, of course, and like you said, Drew Doughty at least 20 points behind those two.
And archaic as it may be, plus minus, PK's was the best of the defensemen, and the possession stats, they differ greatly between all three. Interesting to note, though, PK and Doughty play an awful lot of penalty kill, and I think special teams mean a lot in this. They mean that they're used in all situations.
And we'll leave it at that, but the one note I'm going to make is that considering the Montreal power play was so bad, that might factor in huge as far as that argument.
Okay, and I just want to add, Erik Karlsson scored a record 8 power play goals for himself this year, led the league with 30 power play points. Karlsson, 5 goals. P.K. Subban had 8 power play goals, I believe, more than Karlsson. And especially to note, PK Subban had 6 less goals than Carlson this year, 6 less points, but he took 127 less shots.
Very true. That's it for our first segment. We'll come back on the other side and talk a little bit about some of the good performances and some of the bad performances through the first round of the playoffs for the Montreal Canadiens and what could be done to augment those performances. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Hey, Thirst, can I try out a few summer sound effects on you? Cool. You okay with this? And this? And what about this? Ha! Gotcha there, Thirst. That wasn't sound effects.
I'm no longer thirsty.
You're so out of here.
And now, Mr. Robert Goulet reads from The Writings of Bart, the collected after-school blackboard writings of young Bart Simpson. Mr. Goulet.
I will not trade pants with others. I will not do that thing with my tongue. I will not Xerox my butt. A burp is not an answer. I will not pledge allegiance to Bart. I will not eat things for money. I will not bring sheep to class. I will not instigate revolution. My name is not Dr. Death.
To experience all of Bart's blackboard writings, watch every classic episode of The Simpsons.
I will not call the principal Spudhead.
The Simpsons, now 5 times a week.
My girlfriend has given me a pet name.
I'm afraid to ask.
Snuggle Muffin.
No, it isn't.
And she uses it in public.
Okay, so give your girlfriend a pet name she'll hate, like Thunder Chunky.
I couldn't do that.
I see. Too harsh for Snuggle Muffin. Okay. Drown her out with a 200-mile-per-hour cordless leaf blower.
Got it. Here she comes.
Hey, Snuggle Muffin. What are you doing, Snuggle? I am so out of here.
Wait. Come back, Thunder Chunky.
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve.
Now, back to Breaking Habs Radio.
I'm so tired of trying to fight this. I'm asleep and all I dream of is waking to you. Tell me you will listen. Your touch is more I'm missing. And the more I hide, I realize I'm slowly losing you. Calm all the time. I'll never wake up without it.
Speaking of comatose, welcome back to Breaking Habs Radio. On the Hockey This Week Radio Network, of course, I am Coach K along with Stephen Hindle. And now we're going to look a little bit in depth at the Montreal Canadiens lineup. Who's been good, who's been bad, and who just has to get out of that coma. And we're going to start at the crux of the whole situation and the catalyst behind a lot of what's gone on the ice for the Montreal Canadiens through the first round. That's assistant captain Andre Markov. Not the Markov that we are used to seeing on a day-to-day basis. Steve, is this just a product of wear and tear? Because Andre Markov has always been the type of defenseman, never fleet of foot, but very good at using his stick, much like Detroit's Nick Lidstrom was back in the day. That's not happening anymore, and it seems like Markov is starting to lose his touch. Do you think that's mental fatigue?
It has to be just a matter of time before time caught up with Andre Markov after the two knee replacements. He's been absolutely incredible for the last 3 years. The Canadians have also played a lot of playoff hockey in the last 3 years, and people wonder about guys who get old and how they handle it and how longer seasons affect them. Well, one of these issues could be in the form that there's a little bit of downtime between the regular season and the playoffs, and for Andre Markov to keep his skills sharp, he might have needed a little bit more consistency. Nevertheless, what really stands out is the giveaways for Markov in the first round. But if you look at his stats and how he played outside of it, it's also complemented by the lack of offense. Andre Markov, 50 points in the regular season, 10 goals, 40 assists, a very regular contributor, had one assist in the series against the Ottawa Senators. Not only that, he picked up a couple penalties, and he only had 10 shots on goal, and Markov can be a lot more dangerous when he's shooting the puck. And, of course, the biggest issue was the giveaways. And heading into Game 6, I believe he had 9 through the first 5 games. I'm going to double-check the numbers on the other side of the puck for Markov, but it was a difficult series for him in that regard. Still, PK Subban managed to come around the corner. Markov finishing with 11 giveaways in six games against the Ottawa Senators, but in his defense, he had 15 blocked shots and played 25 minutes a night for the Montreal Canadiens.
Now, a lot of that comes down to the fact that Montreal was never able to really clear the zone very cleanly, a huge gap between the forwards and the D. And I think that was a contributing factor to Markov not giving a puck away all that often.
Well, and you want to add the fact that Markov wasn't alone in being at fault for the giveaways or the play of his pairing in the first round, as PK Subban wasn't entirely on his game either with 9 giveaways through the 6 games. He also played his ass off as much as he could. He had 11 block shots and 15 hits in round one, 23 shots on goal. You know that Markov and PK Subban were just simply out of rhythm so far. But you got to look at Jeff Petrie, you got to look at Tom Gilbert, and you got to look at Alexi Emelin to see how their ice time through the series balanced its way out to the point where, look, these guys made a difference in being the depth that the offense saw help out. Well, the depth on defense did the very same thing. So Bergevin was smiling like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah, and of course, Jeff Petrie, fantastic, especially after PK Subban left game one after the slash on Mark Stone. And he continued that play throughout the series, actually getting better as the series progressed. But you mentioned two other defensemen that were struggling in their own zone, that being Tom Gilbert and Alexi Emelin. Both of them finding ways to give away the puck and make bad reads on the ice, oftentimes leading to scoring chances against the Montreal Canadiens. How can they get better?
I think it's just a matter... Oh, this is a tough one to consider realistically, because it's just a matter of time before Michel Therrien decides to mix things up, and it's also a matter of opponent. That's what I love about the playoffs. In the regular season, you have so many different opponents on such a regular basis that you do have the opportunity to getting away from some weaknesses and some strengths as the season goes along in terms of who you're facing as the year goes by. Petrie, he certainly needed time to adjust with the Montreal Canadiens.
What happens when you play for the Oilers?
But I would not exactly say that he was a guy that was out of place in the first round in terms of his contributions, but he was lacking the offensive side that brought him over here. But defensively, it wasn't an issue. The guy was very sturdy for the Montreal Canadiens, 11 block shots, 16 hits. He averaged approximately 22 minutes a night. This was a really solid performance. You have to realize that outside of the 5-1 loss to the Senators in Game 5, the Montreal Canadiens were pretty good at shutting down a Senators
very
team
stingy
that rolled over the NHL in the final 3 months of the season.
Very, very true. Very stingy as far as their play defensively, with the exception of that one game like you mentioned. Now let's look at the top end. And we'll start with the first line.
Well, I just want to add before we go there, because, you know, Tom Gilbert, a much maligned guy brought in from Florida last year, signed as a free agent. And, you know, unlike Petrie, he had the whole season to fit in. And it's been tougher than not for Gilbert to find his rhythm with the Habs, but he's found it now. 23 blocks in that first round series against the Senators, proving his defensive worth, the fact that he wants to contribute. He came over because he had some good offensive tangibles like Petrie, but these guys commit. They show the heart that is needed to do the job in front of Carey Price.
But the one thing that I don't like about Gilbert's game, and I've said this on our other show on Montreal Hockey Talk ad nauseum throughout the season, is the fact that oftentimes Tom Gilbert will be standing still in his own zone, and even when he's given time and space to skate the puck up to his own blue line and beyond, he doesn't take it. It's very rare. And I think that moving forward, both he and Alexi Emelin have to learn to start skating the puck more aggressively up the ice in order to close that gap and reduce the amount of turnovers that they allow. You remember the turnover off the glass by Gilbert that led to the goal by the Ottawa Senators in Game 4. I mean, it all goes hand in hand. I know he wasn't playing his strong side because it was on the backhand, but it was the wrong read. And that's my problem with Gilbert, is that he's standing still and he makes the wrong decisions because he gets flustered when he doesn't move his feet.
Well, I think that you touched on an excellent point in terms of what the Montreal Canadiens need to do to find success regardless of who their opponents is, and that is to see their defensemen, A, speed up the transition, whether that's skating it up. I don't necessarily believe in that. I do believe in them moving up the puck faster, better reach passes up the boards, not suicide passes. Nothing cross ice, but I like it when it moves fast up the boards to the neutral zone to the red line for the Montreal Canadiens, and then they have a player carry it over the blue line. Their success rate in establishing possession and offensive dominance and time in the offensive zone is very well documented by a guy by the name of Chris Boucher, who does his own scouting stuff out there. You can find him on Twitter. He does some very interesting stuff, but he calculates real, actual values to the game. So if you dump it in, what is your success ratio? If you carry it in, what is your success ratio? How many successful defensive zone passes a defenseman makes in a given period, in a given game? Forwards, the same stuff. You know, advanced analytics and I don't always get along, but when it does come to numbers that show what working and what is not, Chris does good work, and what it does illustrate for the Canadians is exactly what you said, which is carrying the puck over the opponent's blue line is exactly how they're going to establish the formula to getting to the Stanley Cup Finals.
I totally agree. And so now let's move to the forwards, and we'll start with what was primarily the number one line throughout the series, with the exception of the last couple of games, and that's Max Pacioretty along with David Desharnais. And it started with Devontae Smith-Pelly. I think that that line, the biggest crux there, and any line for that matter that has David Desharnais in the middle, is going to have a difficult time. And this is what I noticed throughout the series, Steve, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but oftentimes David Desharnais is not the first forward back on the back check. And what happens is you get one of the wingers, either Smith-Pelly or Pacioretty, coming in to defend, and Desharnais ends up at the point.
Well, right now, and courtesy of our buddy Tony Healy, who's out there listening via Blog Talk and Hockey This Week, and our wonderful connections to the internet world, bringing you our show here, Breaking Habs.
Yes.
John Liu, one of the good guys out there covering the Montreal Canadiens, he put out some practice lines this afternoon. We're happy to get to those because Tony was able to feed them to us. Pacioretty skating with Plekanec and Gallagher. Galchenyuk skating with Desharnais and Dale Weiss, Prust skating with Eller and Parenteau, Delarose with Mitchell and DSP, and of course Flynn and Malhotra on the outside looking in terms of finding line mates. So
right.
Far.
So now, those were the lines going into game 6
exactly.
And 7. I get that.
Can I just say that I think that they won't stay like that, and they simply have remained that way because the game that is currently in progress and tied 0-0 between the Tampa Bay Lightning and Detroit Red Wings will determine how those line combinations change moving forward.
Of course, before we get to the forwards, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. Of course, like Steve said, I am Coach K. He is Stephen Hindle. And now as we continue with the forwards, like I was saying about David Desharnais, whether he plays on the top line with Pacioretty or he plays on the second line with a kid like Alex Galchenyuk, who he himself is suffering suffered through the first round of the playoffs and going into the second round only has a single goal, David Desharnais is not the answer in the middle. And his puck distribution skills are lackluster as far as I'm concerned. I don't think he's he has the size to be able to separate player from puck and be able to distribute properly for a centerman. And now we've talked about this like crazy over the years.
Who hasn't if you followed the Montreal Canadiens?
Exactly. And so if that's the case, and we recognize this, I'm sure the coaching staff does as well, why don't they make the move to reunite the egg line?
Well, here's something that you should really understand about Michel Therrien for all of our listeners.
He's stubborn.
He likes to go with what he trusts. Now, what's interesting is the Galchenyuk experiment from earlier in the regular season. And why it's interesting is because it gives the Montreal Canadiens head coach a bit of a track record with choosing to use Chucky at center if he wants to. It went very well for a little while. Fans got very excited. The results were rather positive. And Galchenyuk, being a natural centerman, hopefully will eventually find his way to that role with the Montreal Canadiens. The glimpse we saw during that time, well, I think that's a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card should the Montreal Canadiens find themselves in a jam and need to do exactly what you're talking about, switch things up to get a little bit more of a bigger body down the middle. And, of course, you could always throw Lars Eller in there, but Lars Eller, a consummate playoff professional, always up for it in the playoffs, always delivers his best performance.
That's what she said.
Well, look, come spring, he clearly gets the job done if no one knocks him out of the playoffs first.
That's right, but in discussing Lars Eller now, and you brought him up into the conversation, he by far has been the Canadiens' most consistent forward throughout the first round. And here's the thing. I mean, when this coaching staff came in and the management staff came in, it was said right off the top that players would be accountable for their actions and they would be rewarded for good play and lose time on the ice for bad play. Lars Eller has played fantastic hockey through six games so far in these playoffs, to no one's surprise, especially not the two of us. Why hasn't he been given more time on the ice? More importantly, why hasn't he been put on the power play?
Well, listen, here is what it looked like heading into Game 6. Lars Eller, for the Montreal Canadiens, was averaging 14 minutes and 32
Nowhere
seconds.
Near enough.
Okay? That was his average through the first five games against the Ottawa Senators, and yet he was somehow extremely effective for his worth. On top of that, the guy was delivering it nearly 56% in the faceoffs, on faceoffs, excuse me. So it was a matter of him getting comfortable. We'd like to see him gain more ice time, obviously, but then there is the risk of overshooting what he does best and when he does it best. Right now, his role on the third line as the centerman playing in clutch defensive situations and slowly being able to contribute more offensively, that is right where he works best. I think the solution is what we saw earlier in the season. If troubles remain for the Montreal Canadiens in terms of David Desharnais' abilities up the middle, and I mean, we can't throw Didi under the bus.
Sure we could. He's small enough to fit.
He's too small to throw. But he was clicking at 52% in the faceoff.
The one thing that he was doing very well, I agree. But if you look at Lars's numbers, Lars's numbers were off the chart.
Oh, they were off the chart. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And therein
lies another reason why he should be out there getting more ice time.
And this all goes out to calling out Thomas Plekanec's work on faceoff.
37%?
Up until Game 6.
Right.
And in Game 6, he was at the Canadiens were absolutely phenomenal. I don't have the numbers in front of me from Game 6, but I do remember somewhere into the third period, the Montreal Canadiens were winning in the neighborhood of 70-80% of the draws. So, it's a strength of theirs. I believe they finished fourth in the NHL overall. And, yes, there was a lot of help from Manny Malhotra, but Torrey Mitchell has done an excellent job as well. They just need Thomas Plekanec to step it up a little. I will give a little credit to Kyle Turris. He is quite a face-off specialist. And something to watch in the future for the Ottawa Senators is how he played, his maturity, and the abilities he's going to bring that team in the future. They were right in getting rid of Jason Spezza. It's a lot easier to build around Turris because he does have a Plekanec-esque quality. And trust me, if the Canadiens fans saw anything out of Plekanec, it's that his loyalty, it's worth a lot in the eyes of fans.
Absolutely. And that 200-foot game, you can't measure that in points or any type of other value. And as we're getting ready to close this segment out, Steve, where would the Montreal Canadiens be without the contributions of the fourth line? You look at Brandon Prust, You look at Torrey Mitchell. Of course, Brian Flynn taken out of the lineup because after the first couple of games, his contribution sort of dipped.
Well, the fact that you had to make room for Max coming back.
Yeah, but that fourth line as a whole has been absolutely phenomenal, not only in the sense that they contributed to that game one victory, but energy-wise, they are fantastic. And as we go to break, Tampa Bay scores to make it 1-0 about, I think it's 6 minutes into the third period.
It's 4 minutes into the third. This is going to be very interesting. Finally, someone broke the ice in Game 7. The Lightning at home against a Red Wings team that is eager to push the favorites out. And I know Habs fans wouldn't mind seeing that as well.
Oh, no.
No, it'll but be interesting to see that. Yeah, the fourth line, look, the bottom line is that Mark Bergevin deserves a lot of credit for eyeing guys who are going to fit there. The way the fourth line is looking right now, though, you know, Devontae Smith-Pelly being all the way down on the fourth line, it speaks to the depth of the Montreal Canadiens, and I think we just have to turn it all the way around. You could talk about Torrey, the homegrown Montrealer who dreamed of having his opportunity to do what he's doing, but it's Brandon Prust.
Totally.
Heart and soul, the totem pole of the Montreal Canadiens in which they get their courage and confidence. And he has done an excellent job at building up those guys on the fourth line to help build up the third, which builds up hopefully the second and the first heading into the second round.
Yeah, Brandon Prost taking a whole lot of abuse over the season because of his lack of production. But people have to understand that's not what he's there for. He's an energy guy. He's a glue guy.
He produced the intangibles this year, and he stayed healthy, and people forgot to realize that, and that was the most important part.
Too many people don't realize that the intangibles are an important part of any hockey team, and Brandon Prust brings the complete package. That's it for the second segment. Man, that went fast. Time to go to a break. On the other side, we're going to look ahead to the second round of the playoffs. And we're going to look at it from both perspectives, whether the Montreal Canadiens play Tampa Bay or whether they play the Detroit Red Wings. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. We will be right back.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Most Americans live within 5 miles of a Radio Shack. So you're probably less than 7 minutes away from a really great deal. What else are you going to do in 7 minutes? 7 minute abs? A 7 minute oil painting? 7 minute baked chicken? Don't eat that. You're 7 minutes from the Shack, where you can get the latest for less with Trade and Save. Right now, save $100 on an HTC Evo 3D when you trade in your HTC Evo 4G or HTC Evo Shift 4G. Or save $75 if you trade in a select smartphone.
Offer good at participating stores through 7/31/11. Trade-in phone restrictions apply. All trade-ins final, not available or prohibited by law.
Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Genius, Brilliant Beer Ad Writer.
Mr. Genius, Brilliant Beer Ad Writer.
While real ad men sold tampons and fancy shoes on television, you poured yourself into radio beer ads.
Beer, oh yeah.
We worship you for showing us the guys who do stuff before the rest of us even know it needs getting done. Like coming up with a 12-inch weenie, cooking up the all-you-can-eat buffet, and putting spandex on beefcake. Because without you, we'd just be some guys in fancy shoes drinking weird-tasting fizzy water.
Beat Yourself Up Hotline.
Is this the Beat Yourself Up Hotline?
Yes, sir. If you'd like to beat yourself up, this is the place to do it.
Okay, I'd like to beat myself up now, please.
Go right ahead when you're comfortable.
I am so stupid. I can't believe how stupid I am. What an idiot. I left all my holiday shipping until the last minute again. Now it's a huge hassle. Why do I have to do this to myself every year? When, oh, when will I learn?
You beat yourself up very well, sir.
Thanks.
But maybe you should just log on to SmartShip.com.
SmartShip.com?
Right. Type in your zip code, and SmartShip.com tells you the fastest, easiest, most affordable way to do your holiday shipping, even at the last minute.
Wow, SmartShip.com.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I think of that?
Well,
why do I have to have somebody else tell me what to do?
Oh, sir.
When, oh, when will I ever have an original thought?
You're really good at this, sir.
I've been told it's a gift.
SmartShip.com, the way smart shipping is done.
Now,
back to Breaking Habs Radio.
Going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward as this game, like we said, is 1-0 in favor of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You mentioned it off air just now. Detroit dominating the game, but of course, the goal, I didn't even see who scored it.
I'll tell you right now, it's Braden Coburn who wants the Tampa Bay Lightning to go on to the second round to face the Montreal Canadiens, assisted by Ryan Callahan and Alex Killorn. So the Lightning getting up 1-0 in this game with a little over 13 minutes left in Game 7 of that series. And, of course, the winner is going to face the Montreal Canadiens. And as you said it, Coach, the Red Wings are just dominating this one, outshooting them 24-15. They have been winning the faceoffs. They've won 26 to the Lightning's 18. Better puck possession, more conservative in their defensive end, more risky in the offensive zone, but yet still the Tampa Bay Lightning scoring on a, well, you could, yeah, I don't know if you want to say it, but it was a bit of a Montreal Canadiens looking dumping, and there you go. It's a 1-0 lead right now, and who knows how long it's going to last. Of course, the Red Wings sure could use a little help from a guy like Nicholas Cronwall. But, of course, he's not playing in Game 7,
no,
is he?
Of course, Cronwall being suspended for his hit in Game 6 and against Kucherov. And, you know, a huge hit for the Red Wings going into Game 7. But they've been getting fantastic goaltending for Peter Mrazek. So, I mean, that sort of offsets that. And Detroit has been doing a good job of clearing their own zone, getting the pucks out and up the ice in order to generate offense. But that, like I said before when I was talking about these two teams, the one similarity that they both have is that they clog up the neutral zone very well. Not something that Tampa Bay used to do when they were coached by a certain Guy Boucher, but something that was brought in by John Cooper now in his second season. He took the first year to get a feel for his team and sort of, you know, take the cobwebs out and transition from what they had learned under Boucher and what they needed to learn under him. A lot of the players, of course, coming up from the Syracuse Crunch and playing for him now. And so these are custom-groomed players that Tampa Bay has, much like what Detroit has in their own system. So the similarities between these two teams, Steve, they're uncanny.
What is very interesting to note is the will to win doesn't get compromised if you're a superstar. Steven Stamkos played less than 14 minutes in Game 6 for the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's been the Tyler Johnson show so far, and depth for the Lightning. And now let's take a look at the Lightning and what they did to the Montreal Canadiens this season. They beat them all three times.
Do we really have to?
Well, you know, it's interesting because on the other side of that, the Montreal Canadiens handed the Detroit Red Wings nothing but losses this season. And, of course, the Red Wings beat the Lightning consistently throughout the regular season. And here they are in Game 7. But what I said to you earlier before we got on air for this episode of Breaking Habs was I'm almost more interested in seeing the Lightning for the simple reason that they are god-awful away from home ice, and the Montreal Canadiens will have home ice regardless of the Lightning or the Red Wings and Henrik Zetterberg almost squaring things up right there. So this is going to go down to the wire.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, a nice save there by Ben Bishop and one of the guys that we talked about as far as his lack of playoff experience and what he brings to the table for the Lightning. But as we look at these two teams, Steve, and we look at what they potentially will do against the Montreal Canadiens, here's my thought process as far as Tampa's concerned. We lost every single game this season to not only Tampa, but Buffalo. We played like serious garbage against the Buffalo Sabres. And so you're looking at one team that's an absolute bottom feeder and, you know, was in the running for Connor McDavid, but lost that as well to the Edmonton Oilers. And then you look at Tampa Bay, who was right up there at the top of the class in the Eastern Conference. I don't think it's a big deal that they lost every single game this year to Tampa Bay. Earlier in the season, they lost, I believe it was 6-1, the four games into the season after they started the season on the road. And so there was a lot of travel involved with that first road trip, and it was, what was it, four games and six nights. So Montreal, a really difficult start to the season, and that culminated in that 6-1 loss. After that, the games were very tight, and one of the biggest contributions for the Lightning, above and beyond what Tyler Johnson did, was Steven Stamkos, and he's been a no-show so far in these playoffs.
Well, that's why I say it's interesting for you to have noted already how much Cooper is relying on the depth coming up from his AHL days and the players that have followed along from Norfolk to at Syracuse to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But the Detroit Red Wings have a similar situation with the guys that have come up from Grand Rapids and made a difference for them. The thing is, if an unsung guy makes a contribution for the Red Wings, it's to be expected because that is a system that creates guys that come out of nowhere. Please refer to Gustav Nyquist. Please refer to Tomas Tatar. Please refer to Riley Shan. Please refer to the list that continues to grow for the Red Wings. Timo Pulkkinen, leading scorer in the AHL, a rookie. Look, they are a very good team as well. And come playoff time, it's always interesting to see the teams that commit to winning. And when you see the Lightning getting away from Stamkos, because maybe Stamkos isn't working right now, he's being too keyed on, well, that's a strategy for them to win. And I want to take us all the way back to the first segment when we were talking about the Ottawa Senators in the Montreal Canadiens series and how the Habs flipped their game plan on the Ottawa Senators in that they became a very dynamic offensive team, generating well over 200 shots, well over 230 shots over the six games against the Ottawa Senators. And what you're going to see in the second round is something very similar. So playoff experience, if it's the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens, well, it doesn't really count because last year with backup goaltender, Gusilevsky. Anyways,
yeah, Gusilevsky.
Yeah, the backup goaltender.
The Latvian guy.
The guy who is no longer in the NHL because of how he played in that series, allowing the Habs to sweep the Lightning with Ben Bishop out of net. It's not fair to use that as a catalyst towards what we might think will happen in round two, but the edge has to go to the Canadiens for the simple fact that they are as equally balanced on the road as they are at home. They have the rest and the time on their side, and as much as you want to look to the regular season, clearly that is not the same team as we saw in round one for the Montreal Canadiens, so I don't expect them to regress and become the team the Lightning beat in the regular season. I expect the mojo to roll on into round two and then for them to be just as aggressive.
I would totally agree. Read nothing into the regular season. The playoffs are a whole different animal. And speaking of animals, let's take a look at the other series in the second round, starting with the most evenly matched series of all, and that's the New York Rangers taking on the Washington Capitals in round two in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Steve, of course, you covered the Washington Capitals for a long time for Hockey Buzz. We were talking about it as we were getting prepared for the show. Up and down that lineup, from goaltending to defense to forwards, there are a lot of similarities between these two teams.
Well, we started with the blue lines, and we were talking about who was playing for the Rangers right now and who was making a difference on the back end for the Washington Capitals. And Washington, obviously, they've got Mike Green on the third pairing for them. So that says an awful lot about their depth with Brooks Orpik, Matt Niskanen, and John Carlson and Carl Alzner as their top four. They are more than ready to counter the likes of McDonough and Yandel and Staal and Girardi. So the balance is going to be there. Who has the offensive benefit? Who has the defensive benefit? We call it a wash because even with Kevin Klein coming in, on the third pairing, like I said, you got Mike Green there for the Washington Capitals, and that's going to make things very nice for Henrik Lundqvist and Braden Holtby.
Absolutely.
But not so nice for guys like Alex Ovechkin and Rick Nash, who are both respectively going to have to go through some brick walls to get things done in round two. The nice thing is that series looks like it is literally going to shape up to be a battle between two wrecking balls, all of which will benefit whoever comes out of the second round series between the Canadians and the Habs and Lightning the Canadians and, of course, the Lightning or Red Wings.
Yeah, then let's move on to the Western Conference, where our first order of business will be the surprising Minnesota Wild coming out of the blue with the signing of Devan Dubnyk and making the playoffs and eliminating the St. Louis Blues, who were expecting better things in the playoffs. But in mentioning Dubnyk, the one thing that the Wild got was goaltending, where the Blues did not, from either Jake Allen or Brian Elliott. And they're going up against the Chicago Blackhawks, who they themselves have had issues between the pipes, between Corey Crawford and Scott Darling.
Yes, it's interesting that you note that, because Devan Dubnyk, like, let's do a quick rewind to May of, or even April of 2014, and Devan Dubnyk was Dustin Tokarski's backup. Let that sink in for just a minute.
Yeah.
Because things have changed an awful lot in the span of a year. And you know what? For Devan Dubnyk, it's been a career-defining year, but a nice return to what once was a promising career. He's established himself, earned a Vezina nomination, and pushed the Wild into round two. As you mentioned, Coach, Jake Allen, Brian Elliott, the St. Louis Blues. We had the pleasure of talking with guys like Jeremy Rutherford from St. Louis Dispatch throughout the course of the season and getting his feedback on the situation. They're comfortable there, and they don't want to get away. They don't want to get into a situation where they have to get another Ryan Miller, or they dip into free agency and all of that. But what we saw was that it's rare to have one goalie stand on their heads in the playoffs for their teams. Devan Dubnyk did it. Carey Price did it. Henrik Lundqvist did it. But they used 25 goalies in round one. And it's interesting to note, there were only 23 goalies used in all of the 2014 playoffs.
Very, very true. And, of course, Devan Dubnyk, another guy who suffered greatly. We were talking about Jeff Petrie before. Another guy who suffered greatly being part of the Edmonton Oilers organization, oftentimes being regarded as an AHL goaltender. But he's proven this playoffs and through the regular season in what he's been able to do in getting a Vezina nomination that he is a legitimate number one goaltender in this league, bar none. And then, of course, the series that has me pretty happy, and that's the Calgary Flames and former Hawksbury Hawks head coach Bob Hartley going up against the Anaheim Ducks and Mr. Weatherby, that being Bruce Boudreau.
Well, isn't it interesting how the Washington Capitals, for their part, are in round two, and there's their former coach back in round two of the playoffs. Well, last year they didn't make it, but of course this year the Ducks have been an interesting squad, very much like the Montreal Canadiens. You could call them the Western Conference's version of Rodney Dangerfield, where they certainly didn't get any respect for the way that they were able to dominate from start to finish. But when you got guys like Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, sometimes it's hard to get around the magic that those guys can bring, especially their experience in the playoffs, the way they handled a beleaguered and beaten down Jets team who did everything they could to make it to the playoffs, unfortunately getting swept by Anaheim. Anaheim is ready, but will they be ready enough for a Flames team that seems to have an answer for every question the Western Conference has thrown at it this year? You got rookies coming out of the woodwork. Sam Bennett made his NHL debut in the playoffs and scored
twice.
So, yeah, the Calgary is certainly stunning.
Here's the thing, and this is the way I'm looking at this series. To me, Anaheim is a little bit of a one-trick pony. Getzlaff and Perry carry the load offensively for that team more than anything else. If you look at the Calgary Flames, you go up and down that lineup, whether it's on defense or on offense, and there are contributions to be had from every single line of the Calgary Flames. It's very hard to gauge. Of course, you've got the Johnny Gaudreaus and the Sean Monahans of the world, so they have that number one line, but they're getting contributions from their second and third line, and they're making it really difficult for other teams to cover them because of the fact that they play with so much heart and so much desire. I think that's one of those competitive attributes that Bob Hartley presents to his players. A friend of mine, Mike Gall, who played in the National Hockey League for Bob Hartley with the Colorado Avalanche, he told me 100 times over that Bob was the most competitive person he had ever met in his life. And he had quite a few coaches, Mike, in talking about Mike Gall. Can that competitive spirit continue to drive the Calgary Flames? And because if you look at Bruce Boudreau and his demeanor behind the bench, he's much more reserved. He's a lot less animated, of course, unless you look at 24/7 in the locker room. But that doesn't count. Behind the bench, Bob Hartley is the same guy there as he is in the locker room. And will that dictate the pace in this series?
Well, look, you saw how he handled the way things went down against Vancouver, not hesitating to get emotionally involved for his players' sake. But I think that is something that the Calgary Flames have that maybe the Anaheim Ducks do not have, going into round two, is a little bit of emotional resolve.
Right.
And you know what? Mark Giordano has not been with this team since halfway through the year. He was snubbed for the Norris, but he was very well winning it with the way he was playing.
Absolutely.
And leading the Flames.
Good point.
He very, very well might return to the Calgary Flames, not perhaps to play in round two, but to join them in practice and start getting ready. And I tell you what, getting your captain back can be a big, big boost and great incentive for the Montreal Canadiens to hope that a 1989 repeat does not occur. But hey, seeing Calgary do well in the playoffs as a surprise is always nice. They're going to benefit from seeing Giordano around no matter what. But what will benefit Montreal fans most is not worrying about who the next opponent is, but how they're going to win round two anyways.
That's it. Can you believe it? The show's already over.
There's not enough time in 60 minutes to fit the kind of hockey talk you want to get in and out to our awesome listeners.
The absolute fastest hour in radio, even faster than our own Montreal Hockey Talk pregame show, which of course will be on the air this Friday prior to puck drop against either the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Detroit Red Wings, hosted by my friend here, Steve. Of course, I'm there pushing all the buttons, and we're joined by Rob Elvaz. Tune in if you can on MontrealHockeyTalk.com. It's always a great hour of radio. You can follow the tweet chat as well by following the hashtag NPL Hockey. So tune in and listen to us both pre and post game. And, you know, and stay with us here at Breaking Habs Radio because we're just having all kinds of fun with this.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Breaking Habs because that's where you will find the home for this show and everything coming out of our crazy little minds.
And, of course, if you want to follow us on a personal level, you can find me on Twitter at Coach Rules, and you can find Steven. That's probably the most boring Twitter handle in the world, at Steven Hindle. That's it for us, guys. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you again either Wednesday or Thursday. We'll know depending on how the schedule works out because Tampa Bay's availability sort of sucks.
And we will be talking round two no matter what.
Absolutely. Good night, everybody. Have yourself a great week.